And now, live from New York City via Los Angeles, California, it's time for The View from Over Here with the man who has a view for all seasons, your host, Stan Weisleder.
Hi there, this is Stan Weisleder, believe it or not, at The View from Over Here. I am in the studio with Malcolm Berman, and we are going to try to keep you people awake for the next 15 minutes before we have our special guest of the day.
And who is that special guest?
Our special guest is Paxton Quigley.
That is a great name.
She is an acclaimed author and expert on females with guns. Can you beat that?
No, I can't. And I'd be awful afraid if I was single.
All right, let's talk about some of the news items. You've heard about the 50th anniversary of the Beatles' invasion of America.
They had. I don't know if you had seen it last Sunday. They had a great show.
I didn't see the show.
CBS.
I was busy doing other things, but I read the L.A. Times retrospective on the Beatles' invasion, and it's amazing what the newspaper media and everyone else said back in the day, okay?
Pray tell. Tell us what it was.
Newsweek magazine. Visually, they are a nightmare. Musically, they are a near disaster. How about that? William F. Buckley, the guy who used to talk a lot, "The Beatles are not merely awful. I would consider it sacrilegious to say anything less than that they are god-awful."
Well, I remember listening to the when he had the show. Every other word, you had to go to the dictionary to find out what the hell he meant.
Well, in that statement, I think it was pretty clear. You didn't
right.
need a dictionary. The L.A. Times. "Not even their mothers would claim that they sing well." Okay. The New York Times. "They hardly did for the daughters what Elvis did for their older sisters or Sinatra for their mothers." The Chicago Tribune. "The Beatles must be a huge joke, a wacky gag, a gigantic put-on." All right. The Boston Globe. "If you don't think about them, they will go away. They sound like a group of disorganized amateurs." And the Washington Post. "Just thinking about the Beatles seems to induce mental disturbance." Well, they didn't go away, and they surely helped to change the face and sound of music forever.
Well, they changed the whole style. I remember when they first came in and all the parents and older generation were commenting, "Look at these guys. Can't they take a haircut?" And now you look at their hairstyle and it's conservative.
Yeah, it's amazing. Times change. Everything changes. But when they show the old videotapes of the fans of the Beatles, you know, they referred to them as screamers back then. Okay, but one thing was amazing. They all sat during the performances.
You cannot go to a concert where people are sitting
now. However, today, their descendants, the bimbo squads, and their mindless dates are always standing or jumping up and down, even if they are in the front row, so that everyone in back of them also has to stand if they want to see the show.
Well, that has been to rock concerts since the 70s and 80s. I mean, when I used to go to concerts,
but Malcolm,
you never could sit down.
People shouldn't have to pay big bucks just for the privilege of standing for two or more hours. It just doesn't make sense.
Well, you're paying the big bucks for the experience because as far as, you know, pure sound, you're better off with a CD or something on your stereo, which has much better quality than when you go to a concert. The concert is the experience of going there.
Well, about 25 years ago, I went to a Frank Sinatra concert. And you know what? Everybody sat.
Well, that's because they couldn't get out of their wheelchairs.
All right. I don't think there were any wheelchairs there that day, but whatever. Anyway, hey, this is something you don't see too often. A couple of big pharmaceutical companies are now starting to work together to find cures, you know, for all of the things that ail us, like diabetes and Alzheimer's. And they're doing it by sharing their research cost-wise and result-wise and so forth. And I think they're doing it because they figured out that their bottom lines would improve. I don't think they're doing it for nothing or because they're nice guys.
But I want to find out how much, not getting political, but how much the federal government is putting into that research to help support it.
Yeah, and how much pressure the federal government is putting on them to coordinate their efforts or share what they've learned or what they're doing. That would reduce the cost going forward.
But let's hope they do find a cure for these or at least start.
Eventually. Eventually we'll have a cure for everything, but then there'll be something else coming down the pike, a new microbe or a new whatever that we don't have a cure for.
But not to be a pessimist, that's when the meteor hits and we go the way of dinosaurs.
Or the meteor drops on us new microbes from some other place that we didn't have before. Now, you've seen this concept portrayed many times on the screen, wherein space exploration is conducted by private corporations. The government now calls them contractors. Okay, it's been in movies like Avatar, where the corporation is always the bad guy, or in Aliens and its various spin-offs. The corporation is always the bad guy. But they are getting ready for space flights for civilians. It's only around the corner, but these flights won't be cheap.
How much are they?
Well, I remember around 1980, there was a company that was advertising these flights in Century City, and if you paid them $50,000 then, that would reserve a flight for you around 1999, 20 years later. That company went out of business, so people who put up money then, they lost.
Right. So, Richard Branson doing something with flights to outer space?
That's the guy who owns Virgin Airlines. You know, I've never understood that. When you have an airline, you like to project experience. How do you project experience when the name is Virgin?
Well, sometimes it's, more attractive to go with a Virgin than to go with someone that's experienced.
Yeah, well, and how do you explain when you go to the store and you want to buy olive oil and it says virgin olive oil, then you have another one that says extra virgin olive oil?
Don't ask me. That's
well, I tried to figure that out, and I think when it says virgin olive oil, it's never been laid. And if it says extra virgin olive oil, it's never going to get laid.
Right. It's probably a member of the Catholic Church.
I read an article the other day on what executives or would-be or wannabe executives should do or not do when they get their jobs. And one that stands out is as follows, and this is good advice for everybody. Never put anything on email that you don't want a judge to have to read in the future. Because once it's on email, it's there forever.
Well, you also should never say anything on the telephone that you don't want the NSA to eavesdrop on.
The NSA, they're not going to go public with it. They just use it to
blackmail you.
See if you're a spy or blackmail you or turn you as an agent, whatever.
Well, I don't know if you've been following the Olympics in Sochi?
Sochi.
Sochi, where the minister, one of the Russian ministers, said he was commenting on American reporters are purposely sabotaging the bathrooms there. And he says he knows because they're videotaping it. And then he realized.
I saw that.
Then he realizes that he said they have videos in the bathrooms.
He screwed up big time. You know, there's a wind farm that's being built on a ranch in Wyoming that will generate 3,000 megawatts. And it's going to send this electricity to California over a 750-mile transmission line. And the cost to California is going to be about half of what they're currently paying for electricity.
Well, I know they have I think it's on the way to Palm Springs, someplace in the desert where you see these big windmills going.
Yeah, they're in the Palm Springs area.
Right. Does that provide us with electricity? I've never really found out.
Not too much. A little bit. Maybe local. But this place in Wyoming is supposed to be the windiest place in the country. And the wind is always blowing. It probably has something to do with the topography of the land and way the clouds and the air circulates.
Well, I thought yesterday afternoon was so windy in my backyard, everything was blowing away with the Santa Ana winds. So, or have you gone to Palm Springs on a windy day and you're driving down the road and all of a sudden the bramble bushes?
Tumbleweeds.
Tumbleweeds pass by and you have to pray because you don't want to hit one.
Well, why? It can't hurt you.
I don't know. I'm a city boy. What do I know about tumbleweeds?
It can't hurt you. It may scratch your car a bit, peel off the paint, but it won't hurt you. Here's something I found that might be of interest. Maybe to you or maybe to other people. I don't know. This started about 6 years ago. But lately, it's been expanding at an accelerated rate.
My waistline.
Aside from that, for the lonely, and there are lonely people out there, we don't have to have lonely hearts clubs anymore. Dance hall pickups or dating bureaus with questionable fees. If you have one of those newfangled cell phones, that's all you need. That plus the app that can put you in touch with millions of contacts. And three of the companies that now provide this 21st century service are Tinder, that's T-I-N-D-E-R. Another one is Hinge, H-I-N-G-E. And another one is Zoosk, Z-O-O-S-K.
For some reason, I get an email from Zoosk.
You do? Then you already know about it.
But that sounds like a women that, I have my picture on there. Come and see my picture. What?
Well, do you get any emails from the next one? There's one for gay men called Grindr. That's the word Grindr without the E, G-R-I-N-D-R. Okay.
That's a grounder.
Yeah, and so far, the predominant users have been mostly in the 18 to 24 age range. But with the continual proliferation of cell phones, who knows where it will lead to?
Well, are you trying to tell me something?
No, I'm just informing you of what some of the interesting things that I found in the past week.
I mean, it's safe to come out of the closet if you want to.
No, stay in the closet, whatever. Or go to a different closet. I don't care. Don't ask, don't tell.
Well, in fact, they had the story this week. Well, you're not a sports fan, but University of Missouri football player has just announced that he's gay.
I saw that.
And you don't want to mess with him. I think he's 6'3", 240 pounds. He's a defensive end. Don't make any gay jokes.
Yeah, don't mess with him. Well, you can't make jokes about anything these days. In fact, it's getting to the point where you can't even make jokes about people who are straight.
Anyway, I hear the music. Yeah, stay tuned. We're going to be speaking to Paxton Quigley. And
yes.
She is?
She is a nationally acclaimed gun expert or gun advocate, primarily for females with guns.
Okay, you're listening to The View from over here on CRNTalk.com and CRN Digital Network. And go to our website, www.viewfromoverhere.com, and we'll be back in a few minutes.
And if you have a question for Paxton, 800-336-2225. Hi, it's Dan Weisleder in the studio on CRNTalk.com together with Malcolm Berman. And our special guest for today is Paxton Quigley. Paxton, are you there?
I am there, but I just want to tell you, Stan, unfortunately, there's someone above me that is using a jackhammer, so I don't know if you hear the jackhammer or not.
Paxton, you have your gun. Use it appropriately.
Yeah, shoot him.
Listen, I thought of that.
Hey, first, before we get into questions, why don't you tell the audience what books you've written?
Well, I've written, my first book was Armed and Female, which was a best-selling book. Then I wrote Not an Easy Target, which was about all aspects of self-defense. The third book was called Staying Alive, Armed and Female in an Unsafe World. And now my latest book, which did come out 2 years ago, is called Armed and Female, Taking Control.
And where can we get those books?
Best place is at Amazon.com and Barnes & Noble.
And do you have a website that we could go to?
Yes, I do. You can go to PaxtonQuigley.com, P-A-X-T-O-N, Quigley, Q-U-I-G-L-E-Y.
Do you have a publisher that you use, or are you self-published?
No, I have a publisher. My first book was published by St. Martin's. The next one was published by Simon & Schuster, and the last two have been published by Merrill Press out of Bellevue, Washington. They gave me a really good deal.
Uh-huh.
And I couldn't refuse it in terms. You know, the problem with books.
So they made you
sure
an offer
you
couldn't
Stan,
turn down. Okay.
You can't make too much money.
Well, tell us, how did you become a gun advocate?
Oh, totally by accident and basically not in a good way. Back in 1989, at 2 a.m. in the morning, I got a call from my good girlfriend who lived about five blocks away from me, and she said, something horrible has happened to me. Can you come to the house? And I didn't even ask her what was wrong. I just, you know, changed, got in the car, and when I approached her house, I saw two police squad cars in front of the house, and when I rang the bell, a police officer answered the door and said, your girlfriend has been raped, and we'd like to take you to take her to the hospital. And I'll tell you what happened prior to that and why she had called me. She had heard glass being broken in her bathroom window. This was at about 1 in the morning, and she realized someone was trying to break in. And she called 911 and told them what was going on, and she was going to try and get out of the house. And she ran down the stairs, got to the front door, but the guy was right behind her, and she fought him off, or she thought she was fighting him off, but really couldn't. He raped her. He left. And the police came a half hour after that call.
Well, you know, I guess they had to stop for donuts on the way.
I don't
know about it, 2 o'clock in the morning. But anyway, I took her to the hospital, and while we were waiting for the doctors, it seems like we're always waiting, I asked her, and I got to tell you, I'm not sure why I even asked her this question, because I've been anti-gun, I never touched a gun, I feared guns, but I asked her, if you had a gun, do you think you could have stopped the attacker? And I said, you know, tell me. And she thought about it, and she said yes. And I started thinking about myself, living alone, and not ever really feeling that safe, and I decided that I wanted to learn how to shoot a gun. And that was very difficult for me. I went to a range that no longer exists in Los Angeles called the Beverly Hills Gun Range.
I remember that
one. And I took
a
private
one.
Lesson.
Yeah, do you have a CCW?
No, I don't have a CCW. I don't live in Los Angeles anymore. I live in Miami, where the guns are really good for gun owners. But I have not gotten a CCW.
Right. Well, I have a question for you. Did you ever consider the alternative to carrying a gun when my house, I live in Sherman Oaks in California, my house was burglarized. And this was before I had a security system. Then I got a security system where they have armed guards come within 5-10 minutes of your alarm going off. They have a dedicated patrol car.
Yes, but the problem with that is that they won't go in because they're not trained to fend off an attacker. And they will call the police.
No, they go in. It's happened where the alarm has been tripped.
Hey, Malcolm, we just got the notice from the control booth. We have 60 seconds. So okay, let me squeeze in a quick question. Paxton, when you travel between L.A., Miami, New York, or wherever, and I'm sure you travel, do you carry, well, in your suitcase?
Well, you can carry in your suitcase, yes. But you have to tell the, you have to go up
of
to,
course.
You know, the counter.
Okay, Paxton, hold on because we're coming up to a break.
Don't go away.
And see if you can get those drillers to stop. You're listening to
the view from
over here. Shoot them. That would be
the view
better.
From over here on CRNTalk.com and CRN Digital Network. And we'll be right back.
Stan Weisleder, I'm back, crntalk.com. Malcolm is with me, and our special guest today, Paxton Quigley, an acclaimed author on females with guns. Paxton, you're still with us, right?
I'm still with us, and...
All right, listen, I meant to ask you before, are you a member of the NRA?
No, I am not a member of the NRA.
Okay, that takes care of that. One quickie question. And we'll be real quick on this.
Oh, let me tell you something. You know, you asked something about the NRA. I taught 7,000 women how to shoot a handgun throughout the United States. And there were a number of times when women would ask me, before they even signed up, are you a member of the NRA? And I would ask, you know, why are you asking me that question? And it was always the same. Because if you're a member of the NRA, I don't want to take the class.
That is interesting. Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Well, then I'm going to ask you the next question. Let's see how good you are. Now, the Los Angeles Sheriff's Department has a minimum required score at the range for all of their people of 210 out of a maximum of 300. How do you think you would fare?
I think I probably would do probably maybe 200 out of 300. I took a course at Smith & Wesson. Their training academy with police officers, all male police officers. And I beat out, well, it wasn't a large group. There were six of us, and I beat out two of the police officers.
Hey, good for you.
Thank you.
Well,
women are supposed to have better hand-eye coordination than men do.
Right, well, but I'm glad to see you definitely feel that women should be trained to shoot guns, because I think a problem is people get weapons and they don't know how to use it.
Oh, they have to take classes. I've seen people shoot themselves in the foot or worse, shoot someone else.
It's not just taking classes. They also have to practice, because
absolutely.
I've had students write to me, email me. Who took my class 10 years ago, and they said, I've forgotten how to really shoot. And that's because they did not go out to the range, even though they purchased guns.
Well, every other license that you get, or most of the licenses, you always have to renew after a certain 2-3 years. They should do that. I'm not anti-gun. I'm just anti-gun people that own guns who don't know how to use them.
Or lays in the closet for years.
Yeah. They should have a requirement every 2 years to renew your license. You know, you have to go out in a range.
Well, but, you know, see, if you own a gun, that doesn't mean that you have a license. You'll have a permit to carry a gun, and that's renewable. But when you purchase a gun in the United States, you don't get a license.
Paxton, what weapon do you recommend for females?
I recommend a revolver. It's much easier to shoot a revolver, to load it, unload it. It's basically, you rarely get a jam with a revolver.
True.
And I recommend a 30, depending if you're going to, you know, carry one. Obviously, you have to carry a small revolver. 38 Special Snub Nose, but for home self-defense, I recommend a 38 Special with a 3 or 4 inch barrel. The longer the barrel, the more accurate you are. And I've taught a lot of women on 357 Magnums, Smith & Wesson, great gun. And but I teach them with 38 specials in the bullets, and I said, you know, you have to practice with a 357.
Hey, I have one for you. You're a resident of Florida, right?
Yes, I am.
Would you stand your ground? That's a law they have.
Well, the situation with Zimmerman, I'm not sure that he was standing his ground or not. But if someone breaks into your home, for example, and the best thing is to really be have a safe room and either retreat to your safe room or be in your safe room, which is usually your bedroom, so that you don't have to stand your ground in the sense of shooting somebody. But you could say to somebody, if you come into this, into my room, I have a gun here, and I will shoot.
Well, every cop I've ever spoken to, excuse me, Malcolm, has said, if somebody breaks into your place, your house, or wherever, shoot them and don't shoot to wound. Shoot to kill, because if you don't kill, they're going to sue you afterwards.
Or they're going to come back and when they get out of jail.
Number one, you should never use the K word, kill. And there's a reason for that, because if you have to be tried by a jury or a judge, you never want to say you wanted to kill. You didn't want to have the intent. You always want to stop somebody. So you say, I wanted to stop him.
Well, even, I remember after my burglary, and the police,
two shots to the head doesn't necessarily stop that.
No, it's much harder to shoot to the head. It's smaller. The best place, and this is where I've taught women, is for the center of mass.
Yeah, the mid-body.
Mid-body, not the head.
Now, do you advocate that a woman should carry a gun with them or just have a gun in the house for self-protection?
It depends on her situation. There are women who, for example, a lot of people who work in hospitals have a night shift, and if they're in an insecure parking lot or they have to walk a distance, I would recommend, if they're trained, that they do carry a concealed weapon, and there are purses out there that are specially designed. Actually, I have one myself called the PAX, where you have the gun where you can slide it out.
Now, there are some states where you cannot get a concealed weapon, but you can carry it openly. I remember the first time I saw this in Las Vegas. I was at the checkout counter at a store, and this guy was having, I don't know, looked like a cowboy 45 open on his hip.
There are very few. Arizona, Nevada, and Vermont. They're very, and Alaska.
Okay, if you're carrying like that in full view.
And, really, in Las Vegas, if you walked in with a gun, an open carry gun in a casino, they would
throw you out.
Anyway, Paxton, we've come to the end of time. We're going. Thank you very much for joining us.
Yes, well, thank you, and it's good talking to you, Stan.
Yeah, and listen, we want to have you come back and give some more information to our listeners out there.
Great.
And where can they contact you if
that.
They want to talk to you directly?
Say that again?
And where can they contact you if they have questions?
If they should go to my website.
We'll have that on our website. Stay tuned.
Okay,
thank you again. You're listening to
The View from Over Here.
CRNTalk.com. Be back in a few minutes with Jerry Cutler.
Hi there, Stan Weisleder again on CRN Talk with Malcolm Berman in the studio.
And our website is
View from Over Here, www.viewfromoverhere, no the, just viewfromoverhere.com.
And all our old shows are on, and all the information you ever wanted to know about the entire world movies.
And even things you don't want to know.
Or don't care about. Anyway, Jerry, are you on the line?
I'm here, my darling.
Just one thing. I know you can do RoboCop. Like I told you, send your reviews to us so we can have it published on our website.
I know that. I get around to it about 3 months after.
I know. It's.
Are you going on the road?
Are you there?
Yeah.
Yeah, but the question is, are you going on the road? I know we discussed it at one point.
I am on the road.
Oh, you want to know he's on the road now? In. Okay.
And is Jeff there, or are you doing a solo today?
Yes, Jeff is driving me.
Oh, Jeff is driving
yes,
you
Jeff.
Where? driving you crazy, I know.
No, up the wall.
Up the wall in the car.
Anyway,
that's
you have
good.
RoboCop today, right?
RoboCop.
Tell us about it.
Yeah. You know, I didn't see the first one because I'm not into that kind of movie. So I didn't bother reviewing it. But this one, I sort of liked it. Number one, it has one of my favorite actors, Joel Kinnaman. Do you know who he is, guys?
No, but you're going to tell us.
Well, if you're nice to me, sure.
Well, I'm always nice to you.
Okay, then I'll tell you. Joel Kinnaman was the star of a AMC series called The Killing. I don't know if you saw that. You guys probably don't get AMC on your TV.
I do, but I haven't seen it.
Oh, well, it's not on anymore, but it was a wonderful, wonderful series, and he was terrific. Anyway, he is RoboCop, and he is a very dedicated cop who opens his door one day to the car, and he gets blown to bits. So he has a head, a lungs, and a hand, and the special effects are used very, very well. And he becomes sort of the latter-day Tin Man. And the song from Wizard of Oz is really, the guys always taunt him with that. At any rate, he does have free will. And he, could he still be a father, which he is, and a husband? We don't know. I don't see how he can be an effective husband, certainly not have another kid. But that's all he had was his head and lungs and hands.
Then, as far as I know, in biology, couldn't he be... He couldn't have another kid.
No, you're right. That's why you're the producer.
So he's like the $6 million man plus, plus, plus.
Yeah, yeah.
So what's the story about, aside from him?
Well, the RoboCops are in Europe, and they're legalized.
I have a very important question before you even continue. Is this a remake of the original or something new?
No, it's a new.
Okay.
It's an extension of it. And it opens up with the Novak element. It's a Fox News-style outlet for political commentary. And the guy who plays Pat Novick is Samuel L. Jackson with a very nice-looking toupee. And he's a vocal a supporter of a company that makes robotic machines. And... as I said, it's not used. It's used abroad, but not here in America. So he works with brilliant and slightly off-center scientist Dennett Norton, who's played by one of the greatest actors of our century, Gary Oldman. I love this guy. I think he is an unsung hero, because he's a brilliant talent, and he's never recognized as such. He's English. What an exceptionally talented guy.
Yeah, he is very, very good.
Yeah, whatever I've seen him in, he excels. At any rate, he is the scientist, and Michael Keaton is the guy who runs the corporation that makes these robo cops. And they're over in Detroit, of course, which is a crime-ridden city. And this is updated from the original in 1987 in Detroit. And he emerges as Alex Murphy, who is the cop's name. He becomes RoboCop. And he is wonderful. I know it's not much of an acting prowess to be in a tin suit and be an actor, but... I think the way they worked it and these special effects is so exciting for me. That's what really makes this particular film. And he fights the bad guys. And it's done a lot of shooting, a lot of noise, a lot of screaming, a lot of blood. But he is very, very effective.
So you get involved with him as a character?
Very much so. And I liked him, and I liked the movie.
Who directed it?
I'm sorry?
Who directed it?
I don't know. It's a new guy, not the original one.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't remember his name. Unfortunately, I'm looking here. If I can find it, I...
Okay, Jerry, well, we have a break, and we'll come back to
you.
Yeah,
but
and,
did Jeff like it?
Jeff didn't go with me.
You took someone else?
You're listening to A View From Over Here on CRNTalk.com and CRN Digital Network. We'll be back in about 2 minutes. Stay tuned for Jerry's further comments.
Hi there, Stan Weissleder here at The View From Over Here, together with Malcolm Berman in the studio.
On CRNTalk.com and CRN Digital Network.
All right, that sounds great. Now, Jerry Cutler, you're talking about RoboCop. We're sorry to have had to cut you off before, but, you know, sponsors have to get their thing in. Anyway.
Oh, God bless them and you, Stan. Okay, Joseph Padilla directed it.
Uh-huh.
And
thank
he did, I must say, a very admirable job. His wife is played by Abby Cornish, who's wonderful. She's adorable, first of all. She cries all the time because of the problems that her husband has, not in any romantic situation, but the fact that he was blown apart and she still loves him and what's going to happen to him and will they destroy RoboCop, and how will they set him into motion? Will they change his brain? She's just a very sweet, loving young lady, and I liked her a lot.
Now, you mentioned something earlier, Jerry, about this company that is making more RoboCops. Are they making a lot of them?
There's only one here because it's illegal. And because they had a RoboCop without emotion, they said you can't have a machine policing the area without any emotion.
So they have to be part human.
Yes, and that's they make him part human so he can have feelings.
Okay,
that's the essence of this particular movie. There are too many robotic figures as is, especially in state capitals, without any forethought or without any human emotion, it seems like.
Anyway. Are any of these RoboCops going to be female?
We don't know. He's the only RoboCop so far. Yeah.
Can he have sex?
I don't see how. I think it would be somewhat very, very difficult.
Yeah, you need a lot of...
He doesn't have the necessary parts. All he has is a hand and head and lungs.
It needs a lot of lubricant. Anyway, Jerry, how many bagels?
I would give it 2.5.
2.5. Okay.
And how about Jeff? How many bagels is she at?
She didn't see it.
She didn't see it. Okay.
I give her 4 bagels.
Jerry, remember to send a review that we're going to put on www.viewfromoverhere.com. No,
the review will be more together, I assure you.
Well, obviously.
And yes, honey, my wife...
I deserve 4 carrots.
4 carrots?
Yes, and 4 bagels.
Well, what are you going to see next? You have any idea, or do you know?
I do know.
And you can't remember.
Wait a minute. To get out my book here.
Sorry, Jerry, that's it.
You have 60 seconds, Jerry.
That weekend.
Anyway, Jerry.
I'm going to see a picture called Next Weekend.
Next weekend.
That's when we'll be back.
I don't know.
Alan Partridge.
Okay. Thanks very much, Jerry. You're listening to A View From Over Here. The View From Over Here. The View From Over Here on CRN Talk Radio.
But our website, you don't put in the.
Right. It's www.viewfromoverhere.com. And we'll be back next week with Jerry and the movie review and...
and a special comedian.
Whose name is?
Brian T. Shirley.
Brian T. Shirley. Have
and
a great week. And we'll
don't
see
let
you.
The name fool you. It's a guy.
I saw the movie.
The View From Over Here is a co-production of Infinity X and TBG International. For further information, contact Malcolm Berman at 818-687-2784. That's 818-687-2784.